Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the War Report. As you may recall, I am on the road again, and I'm in, I don't know if I'll say in or on, Rhode Island, New York, where I've been for the last 2 weeks and will be here until the end of the month. Last week, I broadcast from Albany, the state capital of New York, and now I'm back here on Long Island. We have one guest today, and we have one person who's going to call in, and I won't say too much more about it, but I do want to say this before I get to my guest. I got back here last Monday, and I have had one hell of a bad week since. My somewhat new smart cell phone locked me out. I've been without my research, without my phone, made I don't know how many trips over to the company that I bought it from. Well, the store that I bought it from was a Samsung phone. They've tried everything, and I'm still without it. I'm using a friend's home phone right now. That's just the beginning of a bad week for me. So let's lighten it up a little bit with our first guest. Our first guest is a professor. He is a rather noted individual in his field, and his name is Greg Morrison, and he is a new friend of mine. And Greg, say hello and introduce yourself. Give a small bio. I know that may be hard for you to do, but take a shot at it.
I'll take a shot at it. Hi, my name's Greg Morris. I'm a tenured journalism professor at Hunter College in New York City. I've written two books published by William Morrow, one about kids who killed their parents and another one about a kid who sued the Child Protection Agency. And I'm working on a series of projects about elderly black people living in the most dangerous neighborhood in New York City.
Okay. And you've been professor for how long?
I've been a professor at Hunter College since 1994.
Whoa. Going on 20 years.
Yeah. It's probably the longest job I've ever had.
Well, good. I met Greg last week when we were in Albany, and we spent the whole day with a group of other people going around from one state senator's office to another, to one assembly person's office to another for the entire day. He and I, because we're profs, we had sort of like bonded the night before when we all stayed at the same hotel. It was about, oh, maybe, what, 20 of us? And he was telling me his story, and we were sharing stories. And I said to him, look, you have to come on the show because the show goes from pre-K to PhD. Have not done a lot yet on the university level. This would be an opportunity to bring in the university experience so that people who are pre-K to 12 will see that what's happening to them is happening at the university, some of our most noted universities. And this is something I think will catch many people by surprise, the bullying may have started at the university long before it started at the pre-K to 12. You don't hear hardly anything about it. but it has been raging for a long, long time. And so one of the things that I want to do is have Greg tell his story, and then we should have another prof friend of ours coming in who's going to call in, and then we'll hopefully have other people call in as Greg and I exchange information about what's going on. So, Greg, give us about a, not quite 10-minute, 5-minute recounting of your experience.
Sure. About 12 years ago, I was hired by Hunter College to teach journalism. It was restarting a journalism effort, and I was one of the co-coordinators of the program. I received a grant from the college to start a journalism project for teaching news writing and journalism to students. It captured everybody's attention at the university as well as the college where I taught. That was because the City University of New York 12 years ago was under serious criticism about students who were graduating and couldn't write. And I started this journalism project where the students were publishing stories. The project expanded. I started getting grants. I got a nice grant for multicultural journalism, for multicultural journalism project from the Ford Foundation. I got more grants from the college, and I got a few more outside grants. And this project was really, really hot at the time. And at the same time, some professors in my department chair and several other professors decided that they wanted to take over the project or make me do their bidding in the project. And they teamed up with this sort of this ragtag group of student activists, professional students in their 30s and 40s. And they were going to somehow humiliate me into surrendering control of the project. And I tried to find a peaceful way to negotiate this, and when I couldn't, I was at a department meeting. I told my department chair and everyone else who was there, I was ready to go to court. I was already in touch with the New York Civil Liberties Union, and they backed off. And after that, and for years to come, even up until now, I've had problems with professors invading, professors or staff members, and tweeting on my classes, tweeting on my office hours, insulting my students. The department I teach in is probably one of the most corrupt at Hunter, if not at CUNY. There are great scams, and I have probably filed more grade appeals at Hunter College than any professor in the last 20 years. I've also had more physical altercations at Hunter College than I've had at any place where I've ever worked. New York Post, Time Magazine, Gannett newspaper in Rochester, Rutgers University. I've had a lot of physical altercations with students, faculty, and staff. I file complaints. I win the complaints. And then that just increases the hostility. And then about 3 or 4 years ago, I learned that the administration was behind some of the hostility. So I was hit with a phony violence in the workplace complaint. I had a disagreement with my department chair. At that department meeting, he got so frustrated with my questioning him about some things that I thought he was doing improperly that he asked me to hit him. He asked me twice to hit him, and I refused. And then a week later, I was notified that I was someone had filed a violence in a workplace complaint against me. Took me about 6 or 7 months to be able to cooperate because everyone that was at the department meeting signed on to the phony complaint. And it took me about 6 or 7 months to come up with information, corroborative information, that it was a phony complaint and that I deserved an apology, which I never received. And then probably about 3 or 4 months ago, I learned that the Hunter administration had put out a hit on me that I called it put out a hit on me that my department chair and a faculty member and another staff member were trying to find students to dig up some dirt on me. So that's the status of my situation at Harvard College right now. And I would like to add real quick that I didn't take to sit down. I joined the New York State Healthy Workplace Advocates. I'm a volunteer there. The advocates are part of a nationwide movement to make workplace bullying and workplace bullying in the academy and in the workplace make it illegal. And I also started a petition, which has been getting a lot of attention, and I speak out whenever I can.
Like coming on a war report.
Yes, absolutely.
You know I was not going to let that opportunity slide.
You know
me better than that. Now, you said something that I think most of the teachers who listen to the show, who visit our group page, don't experience in their bullying. You said physical altercation, physical attack. Explain and give example.
Oh, sure. The physical altercation can take this form. I'm standing in the hallway waiting for the elevator, and someone's going to come up and shove. I'm walking down the hallway, and someone is going to run into me to shove me out of the way. I've been to a celebration. I was involved in a celebration of some students receiving awards, and I had this one particular professor who started hissing. He was about 20 feet away, so, you know, that was cool. But then he started walking up on me, hissing. And when he got close enough, I felt threatened. And so I elbowed him in the ribs. I've had at department meetings, I've had one, well, the former chapter chair of the union at my campus. It was at this meeting where my department chair lost his cool and wanted me to hit him. The meeting was canceled because he was so upset that it was one of our colleagues said the meeting was over. I'm walking out of the meeting, and this union official, she's coming up behind me, poking me in my back as I'm leaving the department meeting. And I knew what she was going to do. She was going to wait till I walked out the door, and then she was going to scream something obscene or insulting. So I turned on her real quick, and I said, you know, this isn't over, and I'm not going to put up with this. And then I left the meeting, and you could hear her screaming at the top of her. I couldn't make out what she was screaming, but I know she was screaming at me. I've had one knockdown fist fight. This was off campus. This was with editor of a student newspaper, former editor of the Hunter College student newspaper called The Envoy. He and some of his colleagues had participated in a attempt with my department chair, as I mentioned earlier, with my department chair to take over the publication. And even though this was like, oh, geez, this is like 6 or 7 years after it failed, he was still carrying a chip on his shoulder. And he accosted me at this, it was embarrassing. He accosted me at this meeting at the New School in New York City. It was a meeting of community activists and journalists. And he grabbed me. And from there, it became a knockdown fist fight. The police were called. We were separated. That's what it's been like.
Go ahead, Greg.
Well, I've had to protect myself. I can tolerate stuff as long as people are glaring or shouting or screaming, you know, they're like 10 or 15 feet away. But when they get close, when they try to get in my face, they get too close and I feel threatened. There's been elbows and forearms. I still have the right to protect myself. I have discussed this problem in my situation in my department with the president, provost, deans, etc., trying to resolve this in a nonviolent, peaceful way. And what I've been told pretty much by all of them, either directly or indirectly, and when I say directly, I'm talking about something that's in writing, that's in tape, is that I have to put up with it and shut up. So,
Greg, how tall are you? I know how tall you are. Tell people how tall you are.
Oh, I'm a good 5'11 and 3/4.
And how much you weigh?
I'm trying to get down, but I weigh around 232.
So you're not a little guy by any means, a former professional basketball player, and they are seeking to provoke you.
Yes.
Fortunately, you knew what it was all about, and you showed great restraint. I'd have been kicking ass. I'm sorry. I may have been able to show the restraint because I knew what was it was a setup. I hope I would have been able to do that. But my normal position is to protect myself. My motto is do no harm, take no shit. And that latter part, I really adhere to. But anyway, we have a caller. Let's get this caller in. Are you there, caller?
Yes, James, I'm here. This is Luigi.
Hi, Luigi. How are you, sir?
I'm very good, thank you.
And I thank you for coming on the show today. Again, it was short notice because of my phone issues and et cetera, and I appreciate you and Greg saying, you know, hey, whenever you need me, I'll be there, and you were in my little hour of emergency. I know you have
yes,
a very
James.
short schedule.
Yes.
Give us a brief...
Yes, James, excuse me. Let me mention to your audience, yeah, it was short notice, and I'm away with my family, but your work is so important that I feel compelled to respond. I'm glad to support you.
That's the last thing he told me when I saw him about a week ago. I will support you just whenever you need me. And you paid off for me. Thank you, sir. Give us a short bio and then tell us your story. And we'll see how much time you have that you can stay with us after that.
Okay. Briefly, I've taught at the college level full-time for over 25 years. I've been on radio, television. I've published. So I have some really good academic credentials, but also I'm a veteran. I'm a cancer survivor. So I have some life experience also as part of my bio.
And what's your specialty as a teacher?
The subject I taught the most?
Yeah, academic field, if you can tell me, or whatever you can say.
Yeah, I've taught a lot of psychology, abnormal psych, developmental psych, general psych, personal adjustment. I've taught sexuality, counseling courses, drug abuse courses, all in the area of psychology and sociology.
My audience will know that I have a total bias because you and I both social and psych people, and I just
That's
love
right.
it when I get my colleagues on and we can talk our talk. That's so cool. I got a big old smile on my face now. All right, tell us your story about what happened to you.
Yeah. You know, James, as we spoke about earlier, everybody has a story, and that's how I met you. We're at a gathering of other people who have very difficult stories regarding their challenges in academia. My story is a story about being bullied, and it's not the kind of bullying when you were a kid, get punched and get slapped and pushed and mocked. It's more higher ed bullying. It has to do with things like my annual evaluation was altered. I was threatened by the head of our human resources department. My reputation at the college was tarnished. I was a pariah in our department. And I feel that my possibility for promotion was affected negatively. And basically, as I indicated in my bio, I'm pretty competent and confident. But according to the research, I'm the kind of person, male or female, or member of various minority classes, doesn't matter. If you're competent and if you're confident, you're more of a target than people who have lesser skills and abilities. Also, it didn't help when faced with a minor conflict at school, at the university, I decided to, fight back. And basically, when you're in a large institution, I was like a person with a spear fighting against someone in a tank. But, I decided to fight back. And again, it wasn't a real big issue, but I believe the school has been using public funds for more than a few decades to bully employees in this manner and in ways much more insidious and serious. But that's a little bit of my story. And I think when we spoke earlier, you were interested in what I was talking about in terms of the possible dangerous consequences.
Yes.
Those consequences, maybe because we're in the field of psychology, I mentioned that have to do with suicide and homicide. After I was sued by our institution as an individual, someone came to my house, gave us papers, papers you get when you're sued. And my family was there. And again, it wasn't a real big deal. It was a few hundred dollars for debating over. And they sued me for several thousands of dollars. And after that first year and a half of going back and forth with attorneys and all that, I find myself having intermittent suicidal ideation. And I thought of hanging myself in the yard. I didn't think of anything necessarily homicidal, but I believe this could be an important consequence and possibility when people are bullied over a consistent period. Fortunately, I'm a little bit older, and like you, James, I've been through some things in life. I've been in the armed forces, dealt with the cancer, dealt with a divorce. So I have some armor. If I was 35 years old, a male or a female, maybe married, have two kids, I don't know how I would have reacted to this regular, vicious bullying. And I think you mentioned to me that was an important point that you thought was important for your audience to be aware of.
Not only that, when you told me this story, I told you then, of all the things that you had said, that resonated with me more than anything else. And what it was that you and I, you're referring to me, we're older, we have experience, I was military, da-da-da-da-da, I have this attitude, take no harm, take no shit. So we're, I won't say tougher, but yeah, maybe tougher because of our age and our experience. And what you said was, imagine a younger person in their 20s or 30s, maybe even their 40s, and have all of this stuff happen to them, they may not be able to withstand this like you and I because, again, our age and our experience. And I mentioned to you that here in California there's been some suicides that we know about that directly related to being bullied at the workplace, and the workplace being the school. I know about incidents across the country, and you just brought that point so vividly home for me that maybe because you and I are older and maybe that some of the other older people, we react differently to how some of the younger people would react. And I'll never forget that point because I've never had thought about it in those terms, and hence I wanted you to say it so that the audience could hear someone else saying it other than me.
Yeah. Jim, I'm glad that's important, certainly for all your audience to be aware of. Let me mention this. I'm sure somebody's listening to this saying, maybe another whining former professor, big deal, he didn't get promoted, they altered his eval, he got bullied a little. But, no, there wasn't no great, gigantic, single incident. But consider somebody, you know, every day poking a stick at you, you know? I don't know how to explain it. Going on for 2 years, being afraid of what you're going to get in your mailbox that it's going to say it's from some court. It was just consistent and somewhat overwhelming.
The apprehension. Day-to-day apprehension, hour to hour. Someone knocking on your door at your office. Someone coming on your porch that you don't know. And is this it? Is this going to be the time, the incident? Living under that, it's what I had talked about earlier in terms of the fear factor and the stress. And you being a psychologist, you know the physiological response that the body and the mind goes through as it relates to stress. The flight or fight phenomena is probably the first response. And you, and like Greg, being physically attacked and having to restrain oneself up to a point at least, that I know if I strike back, even though it's defensive, it's going to be used against me as I started it. I physically touched someone in a violent fashion when I didn't. And so I got to stand here and take this shit.
Right.
That's a psychological trauma.
Yeah.
You like turn the other
cheek. One of my colleagues. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, turn the other cheek and then get smacked twice. Which, by the way, you know, I never believed in.
Yeah.
Neither do I.
As you know, one of our colleagues got diagnosed with PTSD as a result of being bullied in academia and at the college level. So it's something that's been in the closet for years, but through work of people like you and others, hopefully it's going to come out of the closet, and these rogue institutions and rogue administrators will be held accountable, again, for spending millions of dollars of public money bullying employees.
One last point, because I don't know how long you can stay with us. The role of the union in protecting you or siding with you, what was it?
Well, at our institution, that idea of protection was a fairy tale because the leaders of our union were, I use the slang phrase, dancing with the administrators. So they weren't interested in protecting individual employees or faculty, just cutting deals with the administration. So there wasn't any conflict to deal with. So they were no help. And the hierarchy in the state university system wasn't interested in it either. It's, as you know, when something real horrible happens, then people may do something, take some action. But no help from the administration, no help from the union, no help from the state.
Did you ever reach out to the Department of Labor?
I don't believe so. But let me tell you this. As I'm saying all this, everybody has a story. I have a story, but I have documents, lots of documents.
But at this point,
nobody's really interested in seeing them.
That is always
They've
the
been
key.
Around.
Exactly. That is always the key, is to have the documentation. Because everyone was always going to say, no, it didn't happen that way. He's paranoid. He's lying. He's trying to push his own agenda, and et cetera. So it's good that you have your documentation. Greg, anything you want to ask?
I'm sorry. I would like to add something real quick. There are recent reports out from experts.
Greg?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah.
He was breaking. He's breaking up on my end.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Go ahead, Greg.
Okay. There are recent reports out that suicide is a serious situation for people who are bullied. And these are medical reports and medical studies. Suicide is definitely a problem. So is PTSD, definitely a problem with people who are bullied. And so it's it hasn't hit the mainstream conscious yet just how violent this bullying is on the human psyche. But the reports are coming out now that workplace bullying is bad for your health. It can be fatal for your health. So I think people need to know that.
Yes, I'm aware of some of the studies, and I'm aware of the organization, workplace bullying organization, that's trying to push legislation across the country to get the state to enact legislation like some of the legislation we were trying to lobby for last week, so that there would be protection, there would be recourse for those who are bullied in the school workplace. I got a message from one of my faithful here, and she pointed out that could it be that, well, first of all, as I mentioned earlier at the top of the show, workplace bullying had been taking place on the university campus long time before people on K through 12 began to at least voice their experience with workplace bullying. Yes, the form on the university took a different form than perhaps at the K through 12. And this person said, could it be the fact that the university is dominated by males? So basically, I think she's suggesting you got this testosterone factor, you know, mano y mano sort of thing, whereas K through 12 is pretty much dominated by females. That's my latter part of my take on the situation. And in looking at the question, I'm saying, you know what? That's a good observation. Yes, because in my department, when I was at UCLA and all the other departments that I was in, I think UCLA maybe had 30 faculty members, and only two, if I recall right, only two female. And I introduced a female candidate with outstanding credentials. She was hired, so that brought it to three. Other places I've been, you could have 20, 25 males, and again, you're lucky if you have one or two female, and on and on and on. I think what do you guys think? Is there anything that you want to respond to this?
I think that's a good point. The only thing I'd like to mention is there's some administrators who are extremely powerful and almost omnipotent in the institution. And if they left, who would they be? Just a normal, you know, normal person. So to some people who should leave the institution, they're acting out pathologically, but they won't leave because they lose all their power and their sense of self. And I think it's more often men than women. That's how we're raised.
At Hunter, it's hard to describe. Hunter starts, the bullying starts at the top. Let me back off of it. When I arrived at Hunter College around 1994, 95, it was a campus that was destitute, and there was a lot of violence on campus. Not guns, not knives, but there was a lot of physical harassment. And Hunter is 70% female. And right now what's happening at Hunter is that the president of the college was written up in the New York Times and the Chronicle of Higher Education in some stories that were critical of her particular style of management. They just wouldn't come out and call her a bully. But if you read the article and you read the comments and the letters to the editor, it was obvious that she is a particularly vicious bully. And that's her administration. And that stuff just flows down. In my department, the women can be just as the two biggest bullies and I mean hostile. When I talk about hostile, I mean they want to cost people their jobs. They want to humiliate people. They want to intimidate people. Two of the biggest bullies are women. They're business partners. They run this film production company. Some of my head-to-head with dealing with people who are trying to promote stuff have been with women. So Herder is sort of it's much different and it's unique because there is a female presence there in both the hierarchy and the bureaucracy, and the bullying is still just fierce.
What about age?
Excuse me, James.
Generational difference. Yes.
James, excuse me. I have to sign off now. Unfortunately, I didn't hear any of Greg's really good comments, but I'd be willing to appear with you again in the show. And, I can't credit you enough for this great work.
Well, thank you. We're both on Long Island. I'll be here two more weeks. Hopefully, we can get together before I leave. Also, this show, like all the other shows, will be in our archives. We're usually within maybe sometime tomorrow, so you can go back and you could hear what Greg had to say and et cetera. And yes, hopefully, maybe the three of us get back together, the three profs, and talk about this even more. Thanks for
I'd certainly like that.
Doing me the favor and coming on at this very short notice.
Okay. Thanks an awful lot. Take it easy,
okay.
Greg. Bye-bye, James.
You take care. Okay. You take care, too.
Okay. Okay. Greg, what about what I just said in terms of younger people, like the corporate types now that are coming into the university in administrative positions and who've been taught that they are the power, they are the force, and it's their way or the highway? And one other last thing, too, and I say this all the time. When I was on campus, both as an undergraduate, graduate, and then as a professor, academic freedom was king. No one crossed that line, be it the chancellor of the campus, the president of the regency, you name it. We had academic freedom that extended across the board. I'm hearing you guys and other friends of mine and other people I've talked to are saying, that's gone now. It was our own, and of course we had an academic senate, and you could, supposedly we, as in the academic senate, we were part of the governing body of the university. The administration had some power, but we, in the academic senate, we had more. And if we didn't like something that the university administration was proposing or seeking to do, it came into the Academic Senate. All members who were faculty members who were part of the Academic Senate, I was part of as assistant professor, we could say something and we could have tremendous voice. I don't hear that in any of the conversations I've had over the 5, 6, 7 states that I've visited so far and my friends that I have probably maybe 10, 12 states. Am I saying anything that you can respond to, resonate with you?
Oh, absolutely. Academic freedom, I can use Hunter as an example. I also talk full-time at Rutgers, and I teach full-time at Hunter. And not so much at Rutgers, but at Hunter. Academic freedom is an abstract. There are lots of references, to academic freedom, but, invading an instructor's classroom, that's common. Harassing a professor to keep him from writing the expression at Hunter is dirty linen, exposing either corruption or stuff in your department or around the college. No, academic freedom is really taking a hit. No, let me back up. It's been reduced to an abstract. People don't firmly, at least where I teach, at that campus, teachers, professors, deans, administrators, they don't embrace academic freedom with the kind of fervor that it used to have, with the kind of importance. It's something to discuss. You make a reference to it. I think this, particularly at Hunter, you can clearly see that the bullying is a means of management control. CUNY has a lot of problems. Its problem is under defunded. Doesn't get, it's like in the, it's like ranked 48th or 49th in higher ed funding in the United States. They don't get the best faculty. No, they get faculty, but they don't get the best administrators. They don't have people who can work with people who disagree with them. It's either my way or the highway, and you see it. It's very clear, particularly at my campus. We've had one provost forced out. We've had two deans forced out. At my college, the president has a very, very big and popular reputation for bringing in a lot of money, a lot of funding and stuff. But then she fires the people who are supposed to do the administration of the projects that she brings the funding in. And nothing gets done. I've been there 12 years, and they're still talking about trying to, more than 12 years, and they're still talking, much more than 12 years, and they're still talking about trying to upgrade and improve the curriculum. But when the people who are tasked with their job, they're forced out because they're unable to work with what the administration wants and what's the honest, respectable way to go about doing the things that they want to do.
Greg, putting truth on the table. Obviously, they're trying to push you out. You're tenured. And I guess they're trying to test your resolve in terms of how long you will put up with the crap that they're laying on you so that you may walk away from your tenured position. I mean, obviously, you know that. They know that. And it becomes a question of your resolve. Has your resolve been pushed to its limits? I don't want to say that because, you know, people hear you say yes, then they'll push you even more because now you're at the edge and just a nudge or two and you're gone. But I think it's a legitimate question in terms of how long can you take it? Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about.
Oh, I know, but well, please, I want the example. I want to hear it. I really do.
Okay. Not at the university level. You know I'm here in New York, and you know that I've been doing several shows now on this workplace bullying. One of the things that has happened is more people are reaching out to me, but more importantly, they're reaching out to Kathy. You met Kathy Cole,
yes.
Her show, you know, all fact up. I mean, and I'm staying with she and her family here. Her phone, her email, her Facebook lights up 7 o'clock in the morning and stay lit all day from teachers who are reaching out to her, want to tell their story to her. They want her help in trying to get these people off their backs and et cetera. And the one story that really hurts me the most is a great teacher who's been teaching 20-plus years. I think he's just a few years away from early retirement if he wants to take it. They have jumped on him for all kinds of made-up reasons, rubber room stamp, the whole nine yards. It has cost him physically, emotionally, to the point of illness, which this show is supposed to be about, the impact of this type of stress on the individual. He's got the stress syndrome, man, like you wouldn't believe, parts of his body that are breaking down from the stress. And the only solution that they keep offering him is retire now. Well, if he does, he'll lose $30,000 a year for the rest of his life by retiring now versus hanging in for 2 years. And what's sad, I think he's going to take it because he can't take it anymore. that hurts me because he is at the end of his rope. Go ahead.
Okay.
Okay, well, to be honest, it's been very stressful. It continues to be stressful. A few years ago, I was trying to come up with figure out a game plan to leave. I mean, because the harassment was so bad. And then about a week ago, I decided I didn't want to focus on a plan about leaving. It's quite possible there would come a time when I will have to leave, or they will force me to leave, or they'll make it so impossible that I will leave. They will have to do that. I'm not going to be quiet. I'm not going to stop what I'm doing. And one of the things is not that much of an advantage, but it's a slight advantage. They are so corrupt from the administration all the way down to my department with the things they do and the stuff they want to hide. There's so much that they want to hide that I am willing to do whatever I can to expose it, as well as try to, you know, hang in there until I can come up with a better game plan. I'm not looking forward to retirement anymore or planning. It's going to be a day-by-day, year-by-year thing. I'm willing to admit that, you know, it could get bad and I have to leave, but I'm no longer doing this long management, you know, this long planning about, well, 2 or 3 years, this or that. I just decided I'm doing it day-by-day, and I plan to fight until it becomes realistic to me that the fight is no longer any good. I'm still good for the students who enroll in my classes. I still do really good things in other circles off campus. I have a really good reputation off campus, even around that campus. I have an awful reputation in my department, and I have an awful reputation with the administration. But a lot of the really good things that I have done and do, those are written in stone. And so I just plan to, for me, when I'm dealing with this kind of harassment, the idea is to make it easy for the next person to come through the door so that the next person doesn't have to put up with this stuff. And that's one of the reasons why I volunteer with the New York State Healthy Workplace Advocates and work with the people of Massachusetts and deal with people like you, because I want to make a contribution so that the next wave behind us doesn't have to put up with this stuff. And as long as I can be optimistic about making a contribution, I'll be at Hunter as long as I can.
That's my guy. You know I love that. You know that. My attitude is, you don't, no flight, you fight. And,
right.
And you fight as long as you can stand. And even if they knock you to your knees, you keep on fighting. But anyway, people who know me know that that's my thing. Okay, I got about 5 minutes left. I want to use that for a particular thing. I always talk about at the end of the show what's been taking place wherever I am for during that week leading up to the show. Of course, everybody knows that I'm here in New York. But what I want to talk about is something that's going to happen next week. And, Greg, you may find this to be of great interest. As I said, last Monday, Greg and I and the caller that was on, we were up in Albany, and it was like 20 of us, and then all of a sudden maybe it was 30 of us, from teachers from all over the state, some from Massachusetts. We broke up in groups, and we went to different legislators' offices. And usually there was at least 10, maybe 12 or more per group going to see these legislators. And people took their turn telling their stories. I filmed it all. In most cases, there were some places where the legislator or his staff person or her staff person who are running the meeting would say, you can't record, period. Or you can record, but don't record me. And so we did that. This coming Saturday, in Manhattan, my colleague, my friend, and I, Kathy Cole, we're going to hold that same kind of forum here in the city. We have a location. We have everything set up. We're inviting teachers from all over to come in and tell their stories, just like we did when we were in Albany. I will be filming all the stories. And for those teachers who are listening, or people listening can tell teachers, as I did when I was in Massachusetts, I was in Connecticut, I was in Buffalo, you name it, I always tell everyone, if you have the possibility of being retaliated against for telling your story, I can block out your face, I can disguise your voice, I can allow you to turn your back to the camera, shoot you from behind, so that there would be almost no possibility that anyone will recognize your voice, your face, and be able to identify you and come at you. So we have right now some of the well-known cases here in New York who are coming and will be participating. Greg, welcome to you if you want to come and tell your story again. It's so funny because Greg also has a beautiful camera. He's a skilled photographer and videographer, and I'm saying to him, I'll do your story, man. So come and let me do your story. Encourage other colleagues, teachers, to come so that the more people we get to tell their stories, the more powerful the impact will be when we start presenting this edited version to politicians up and down the state and all levels of government so that they can see firsthand and hear what's going on and the harmful effect that it's having on teachers, on students, on parents, with the whole idea that if enough of us come together, solidarity thing, no more divide and conquer, that we can show the people who are responsible for protecting our First Amendment rights, our Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights, the whole nine yards, that they haven't been doing their jobs. And then hopefully we could spur them to either through shame or what have you, to do something. So we'd love to have as many people in the general area to come. And if you're interested, you could go to Kathy's home Facebook page, All Fact Up. You'll find all the details, the time, the location, and et cetera. It'll be Saturday. I think it's afternoon, but I may be wrong because we've been playing with times and et cetera. And you can find out everything that you need to know. You can then give us a call, send us an email, Facebook message, what have you, so that we'll have an idea how many people are going to be there. How does this sound to you, Greg?
It sounds wonderful. It's like D-Day, you know? I'm going to be there. I'm going to spread the word as much as I can everywhere. Everybody should be there that Saturday.
Well, thank you, sir. And my time is running out. You got maybe 30 seconds to do a closing statement. What message you want to put out to everyone who is listening today?
You don't have to put up with this stuff. There are a variety of ways for you to make a contribution. You can remain anonymous and write emails. You can participate in programs just like this one. You don't have to identify yourself, but you can get your story out there. You can make significant changes that are going to help you and your communities and your kids. So always think of a way to make a contribution. Every little bit counts.
Very well put, sir. And with that, everyone, I didn't know that it was Valentine's Day. I have been a bachelor so long and not have to deal with Valentine's issue that I had no idea. And people would call me and say, you know, it's Valentine, and can you do the show next week? I'm going, no, what is it? Valentine? Well, you know, my boyfriend or my girlfriend, my wife, my husband is taking me someplace, and I really like to do it, but I can't because it's Valentine. I don't go like, Valentine? You're going to put me down for Valentine? Yes, folks, it's been that long since I had a date that I don't even know about Valentine's anymore, let alone what it is. But anyway, with that, as usual, thank everyone for listening in. And, you know, we'll be in the archives hopefully fairly soon. And happy Valentine's Day, whatever that means to everyone. I'll talk to you soon, Greg.
Thank you very much. You take care now.
Okay. Bye now.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.